come one, come all to a beautiful show. It's gonna be awesome and some other stuff. Some other musical stuff.
Hey, everybody. This is Talk Music to Me, episode 22. The website, as always, is talkmusictomeslc.com. Head over there. Hear all of our past episodes, all of our past interviews. Awesome interview today.
Oh, my gosh. I'm still excited.
Jason Navarro from The Suicide Machines, from Hellmouth, from Break Anchor, and from Jay Navarro and the Traitors.
And God knows what else.
God, and everything else. We talked to him for about an hour. Great conversation.
I want to adopt him into our family now.
He's ours.
I adore him.
We're going to keep him in a cage and we'll give him water every day.
I think he'd break out. I don't think that you could contain him.
I don't think you could either. Awesome. He spent a lot of time talking about Suicide Machines. Their new record is called Revolution Spring. It is fucking amazing.
Yes. If you haven't listened to it, please go listen to it. If you haven't bought it, go buy it.
You should definitely go buy it.
Go buy it.
Here's the thing. This happens a lot in music in general, but you know, especially in punk rock, it seems like, where bands will take a break for a long time, like a decade plus.
Yeah.
And then they'll come back and it's the same band, it's the same sound, but it's just not quite the same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not the same vibe, not the same energy. This new record, though, Revolution Spring, is amazing. It's as good. I think it's better than anything else they've done. Which is saying something, because I love every one of their records. Even, you know, he talks about his least favorite Suicide Machines records.
You guys are going to hear a lot of really amazing stories. I'm already excited for you.
He was very candid. So thanks to Jason for coming on and being so open and honest with us. It makes a good show for sure.
And the best way I can describe the new album is, as I was listening to it, it like literally blew my face off. So I'm a big fan.
It's really good. It's everything you love about the Suicide Machines.
Oh my God, it's so good.
It's a great record.
Yeah.
From start to finish. So. We're going to jump into that, but first I want to play a single from a band called Zombie. Now, Jeremy Zombie, he actually plays in Kyle Tricola and the Strangers. He plays guitar. And I think he does some vocals too on the new record, The Moon USA. Anyway, he's got another band called Zombie. They're fucking fantastic. He liked our interview with Kyle and was commenting and saying some very nice things about it. So I checked out his band. They are really good.
Super good.
And they have a new single that is out. It's on Spotify now. It's also on Bandcamp. Go check it out. It's called Can't Get Enough. This is Zombie. This show is Talk Music to Me.
Thank you.
Jason Navarro, how's it going, man? You are in a ton of bands. You are in one of my favorite all-time bands, the Suicide Machines. And we appreciate you taking the time to talk to us for a little bit. And first of all, how you doing? Are you holding up okay being quarantined out there in Detroit?
Funny. Like, everyone asks each other how they're holding up these days and said, hey, I'm happily unemployed.
Happily unemployed.
Some people are negative about it, but you know what? I'm all right. I've been working at the same job for almost 14 years. I was like, they let me go, and I was kind of like, I'm kind of digging it.
Yeah. it's a little bit like retirement. Yeah. Yeah. It's like a vacation. But musically, I mean, you're so busy with all the bands you're in. I mean, let's just list them off real quick. Suicide Machines, Hellmouth, Break Anchor, Jay Navarro and the Traitors. Have I missed any?
Yeah, I do like a political kind of, I don't know, like D-beat kind of crust band no one knows about. So I don't really keep that on the down lows.
In total, that's five bands.
Wait, I have to say something. It made me laugh because I was listening to an old podcast interview that you did, and you were talking about working and being a dad. And I just looked at Alan and I said, oh my God, when does he have time to do any of this stuff? It's very impressive.
I don't. That's why it's nice not out anymore.
Yeah, well, I'm working from home for my job, and a few people really hate it. I love it. I don't have to commute. I get to be home with my favorite people. It's been awesome.
Yeah, I've been on the night shift for the past four years. So, I mean, I barely see my kids 6 days a week. So I'm kind of all right with not having a job. It's kind of rad.
It's got to be amazing. You're like, dudes, hey.
Picking up my guitar, learning songs I thought I would never learn. Like, oh, I'm going to learn a Rolling Stones song today. Like, I would never play a Rolling Stones song. You know what I mean?
Well, now you got the time to do it. But musically, how are you how are you filling your time? Because you are so busy. I mean, there's five bands right there. I imagine just musically, when you're not working or with your family, you're out recording or touring
Yeah, it's kind of hard because I really like to skateboard. And I would say out of everything, skateboarding suffers the most in my life because that's one of my favorite things to do. But like, you know, it's the thing that doesn't have to get done, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like the thing that I love the most that suffers. So.
Yeah,
just the skateboard. That's unfortunate. I still do. Don't get me wrong. I still skate, but it's like, I just like, if I have time to go skate or do something for my family or do something with a band, I'm going to do those two things first, you know? So,
yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. I have really understanding band members too. You know what I mean? Like, you know, they're all seasoned vets. They'll all practice without me. Mm-hmm. Or we'll practice without them if someone can't show, you know, things like that. So,
have you guys done any of the Zoom practices, or have you been trying to talk to each other? It's like, hey, dude, see you at the end of it.
Yeah, no. We're not going to do any. Like, I'm not trying to knock anybody. Do your acoustic sets. That's cool. And for some people, it's awesome and it works great. Suicide Machines aren't an acoustic band. I'm sorry. Just
right.
Wow, that would be interesting to see.
Although, I mean, your talents, all of your bands are so eclectic in the sound that I think you could probably pull it off more than anyone.
See, listen, man, I've done acoustic sets with Break Anchor before, and it works. And it kind of makes sense, too, like the way we kind of rework some of the songs. But, like, I don't know. I just don't see the Suicide Machines as an acoustic. I mean, maybe those guys have proved me wrong, but I kind of think in the back of their heads, they're kind of like, I don't know, like, what songs did we even play? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Just don't see it.
Well, see, and I'm always wondering if you guys are picking up, like, brand new things that like you said, things that you thought you'd never do. Is there anything new that you've been doing at home that's been super fun?
Not really. Just drawing again a lot with my kids. Learning how to play guitar in C tuning and not learning because it's the same thing, C standard, but been writing in C standard tuning, which is not something I normally do. Dumb stuff. Nothing crazy. Catching up on dumb things like going on my Instagram and finishing my discography, like everything I've done, I've listed and kind of noted a little bit because, you know, I don't have time to even sit on Instagram and do anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I finally went back to doing that. I mean, I don't know if I'd consider it fun. You know? Watching a lot of movies with my kids.
Oh, yeah. We've been doing that too. Lots and lots of movies, lots and lots of Netflix. I think I just did a lot of sleeping the first couple of weeks.
Yeah, yeah. It's wild. I mean, are you guys adjusting, especially with kids? Are you adjusting to a new normal?
Well, so here's the thing, man. Like, it was harder, a little bit, not harder for me, but it was a little different for me, and maybe some other people can relate. Mm-hmm. I've been a night shift for the past 4 years. So I start work at 6:30 p.m. and I get out at 5:30, 6 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
So I would go to bed around 8:30 a.m. and then wake up about 2:30, and then basically get ready, see my kids for an hour or two, and then go right to work. So like my sleep schedule, that's what I do. That's what I'm saying. I even love making work. I'm back on like a normal sleep schedule. It's the best. Go to bed early, wake up, sun's out. Like, I see the sun all day.
See, that's it's what red. I'm thinking. Like, you walk out, you're like, dude, this is awesome. I haven't seen this in so long.
Well, that's not going back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fuck no, man. Fuck no. You're back into the regular swing of things. So that's great.
100%.
Obviously, the Suicide Machine, you guys released your first record in 15 years, and you released it right as all of this shit was going down. I think it's
totally pretty.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Well, I was talking to Terry from Jukebox Romantics who hooked us up with you.
Thanks, Terry.
And we were trying to figure out if this is the best time to release new music or if it's the worst time from a musician standpoint.
Well, I mean, I'm sure it's not helping record sales. I mean, who has money? A lot of people don't have money.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, a lot of people really do. A lot of punk rockers still really do still shop at record stores.
Totally.
Like ones. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. I can't imagine that it's helping record sales. It trips me out to see that we're on the Billboard charts for like a couple of weeks, which is really insanely strange. So I don't really know how any of that works. But what I mean by that is, yes, it's people are getting it. I mean, maybe a lot of people are downloading it and getting it on Spotify or all these other like streaming platforms. But I wouldn't know the numbers or care.
Yeah. So. I kind of think it's a good time. I think this is the only time I've really had time to listen to music because I've been a working stiff for so long that when I get home, you know, time with the kiddo and then you go to bed. And so it's been nice. I'm like, I think I'll listen to a record. I think I'll go for a walk.
Yeah, you know what? I've been working out again a lot, speaking of going for a walk. But you're right, because I listened to the new X record today.
Yeah. So, you know, you probably wouldn't have had time.
I probably would have woken up, had a coffee, ate lunch, and then checked the news and then went to work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't a bad time. And I had time today to sit and enjoy it, drink some coffee and listen to the whole record. And I'm grateful that they put out another record because, you know, X is like one of my favorite bands for sure. So,
well, I can speak from us being fans that we were really excited when your record got released because we've been spending more time listening to music. And so it's like, yes.
Well, I've had it on nonstop since it came out. Like, yep. It's honestly, a lot of bands, you know, they'll take a break. and you guys took, 15 years?
Something like that,
yeah. And a lot of bands will come back and it'll be, you know, it'll be good, but it'll be kind of, you know, watered down a little bit, not quite the same energy. This is, I think this might be my favorite record you guys have ever put out. For that to happen 15 years later, that's wild to me. So I don't know how, from everything I've kind of read, you didn't like sit down and say, we're going to make a new record. It kind of happened organically, right?
Yep. You know, we've been writing songs for almost like 3 years for it. We did like 28 keepers. You know what I mean? It was just like, you know, we're lazy. We work a lot too. All of us are working class, blue collar guys. So we're always working a ton too. And my schedule is the opposite. So we would just have these like writing sessions where we would just spurt out a whole bunch of songs. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, once someone would finally kind of get the spark again and kind of went through everything. And it really was, there's no pressure. You know, it just mm-hmm. happened. I don't know if organic's the right word, but it was just kind of like we waited, you know, until we're like, yeah, this is a record, you know.
Well, thank God for it because it rocks.
Seriously. And it really did come out at the perfect time. And I really appreciate some of the more positive aspects of this record too, because I say this pretty much on every episode, but I'm pretty cynical, especially when it comes to political shit and the state of our country right now. And so when you guys release something, it's got some hope in there and it's got some positivity. It's very much needed, I think, right now. I don't know how that's evolved for you, that sentiment since all this shit went down, or are you kind of in the same boat?
It's been evolving. It was really hard for me to finish the last Hellmouth album that was titled, well, the second to last album that was called Oblivion. Cause I was in a far more positive and forward thinking, state of mind. And it was really hard to finish an album that angry. you know what I mean? Like yeah. being where I was at, right. It was really hard to figure out how to transform Hellmouth into, like, if you go back and look at some of the lyrics, and it's basically about change.
Yeah.
A lot of people probably understand that because they probably, oh, it's so angry and hardcore, blah, blah, blah. And yeah, I'm going to crit to it. It's just like you read the lyrics, you go, wait a minute. Oh, this dude's talking about changing into like a metamorphosizing into a more positive situation here. And that's kind of like, I was already headed that way.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when we were doing some of the more angry songs for the new Suicide Machines record, I was like, I don't know how I'm going to put this into perspective to make this work because where I'm at, like what my headspace is.
Mm-hmm.
I hope it's something for people right now that will at least put them in a better mood for a little while, keep their mind off of, you know, what's going on, you know? So I'm glad it works for you.
Yes.
It definitely did. In fact, the other day I was getting so riled up and so upset about some of the shit going on and some of the people's reactions to the quarantine and everything. And then it just so happened I was listening to the record and Simple came on, and it really, I'm not lying, like it physically calmed me down. Like just hearing those lyrics and hearing the song physically calmed me down and got me off of my edge that I was on. So I really appreciate it. I think this record's done a lot for a lot of people. I think it's a perfect time. And it just feels like an old friend when I heard it. Like when I heard the first couple singles, it felt like an old friend. Like the Suicide Machines have been such a big part of my life since I was in high school. So I really appreciate you guys coming out with new stuff and continuing to push on.
Well, and I have a story for you. So you guys were actually the ones that started me into punk rock, because I was like 14 or 15. I went to the Delta Center to see No Doubt, and I can't think of the other band.
Weezer.
And we were there early, and I was there with two of my friends, and you guys came out and just rocked the place, but like nobody was there. And my friends were sitting there, and I wanted to stand up and jump around and bounce and everything. And then I went home, and I was like, what is this? And so it started everything. So thank you, because every time I hear about Suicide Machines, it puts me in a good mood because I'm like, I love those guys. Those guys brought me into the fold. So thank you.
No, that's awesome. I, you know, that was our devious plan, for No Doubt.
Yeah, that's how you corrupt the youth.
I'm
right
like,
there.
It worked.
So you guys are from Detroit, and what was the scene like? You know, Detroit is very famous, released, you know, the home to many, many, many amazing musical acts over the years, but you don't hear a lot about the Detroit punk scene. When you were coming up and when you were a kid, what was it like? Did you guys have much of a scene out there?
Okay, you know when you watch all those funny movies like American Hardcore?
Mm-hmm.
Or the New York Hardcore Chronicles, and they're like, oh my God, it was so scary, people getting killed. That's 100% how it was, 100%. Like 1987, 88, that's kind of when I really started, like, you know, getting my boots dirty and going to shows. And it was, you know, I was like 13. Mm-hmm. And it was like, you didn't know, like you knew you were throwing yourself to the wolves going to the show.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't know if you were going to get robbed outside, because the shows are never in good neighborhoods. And in Detroit, that doesn't mean anything racial. It just was, the neighborhoods aren't good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, main bars I went to all the time was a racially mixed neighborhood. It had nothing to do with any of that. It just had to do with poverty.
Mm-hmm.
So you go into these neighborhoods, you don't know if your car is going to get stolen. You don't know if you're going to get robbed, shot, stabbed. And then you'd go into the bar or the space, and it was the same situation, because back then it really was the outcasts, the fuck ups. Can I swear? I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Sure. We swear constantly. You're totally good.
Well, it was, you know, it was like kids who came from broken homes, mm-hmm. who were brought up wrong, or kids who, you know, it just was the fuck ups. You know what I mean? Or people who didn't fit in. That's what it was. which a lot of times some of those people weren't, they weren't all there in the head, or yeah. they were very mean. Mm-hmm. And it was very much like that. It was very violent, very scary. And then maybe about 1990, things started to change quite a bit. You know what I mean? It became more safe. There's better DIY spaces that were straying away from things like that. And then you had bands like Gangster Fun kind of playing upbeat, more fun things. You know what I mean? Or post-hardcore was kind of coming into the situation too, which gave people a conscience in a weird way about things. So, mm-hmm. yeah, it was very scary.
Do you have any, like, super scary stories from that time or super good stories from that time that you can remember?
Well, I mean, the singer of my band was murdered.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I used to be in a band called Cold as Life, and my best friend's cousin murdered my singer.
Oh, jeez. So
that doesn't tell you kind of how things were.
Yeah.
At the time, that's really kind of how things were. Whoa. You know, everyone was fucking wild. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm not saying I was a great person either. You know what I mean? I definitely was selling drugs. I was running wild in the streets with all the other kids who just didn't have. I mean, I hate to say it, good parenting. A lot of people, we came from bad homes, you know, mm-hmm. at that time. That's how it was at that time. You know, the punk rock was not big. Hardcore was not big.
Yeah.
People who were in that scene, for the most part, I would say 85% of us, we came from really bad family situations. So we didn't have people there showing us what's right or wrong. If anything, a lot of times they're showing us what was wrong. Mm-hmm. So, you know, things did change. They got a lot better. And I love the conscious movement of what hardcore became.
Yeah.
Punk rock.
And how old were you when you started going to shows and kind of getting into the scene?
Well, I think my very first show was the summer between 8th and 9th grade. And so I was like, what does that make you? 12 or 13?
Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah. I had a lot of older friends that I would skateboard with. You know, and they're like, we're going to go see Agnostic Front.
Oh, you know, yes.
You know, and I wouldn't go to this place called the Greystone because I was too scared to go with all my older skateboarder friends that were punks. So I was terrified. I was a little kid, man. I was like some little dumb, like, you know, like a Rush shirt or something. Like, I'm not going to go to Agnostic Front show, and just, which has nothing to do with Agnostic Front. It's one of my favorite bands in the world. But in Detroit, it was a very sketchy scene. Mm-hmm. You know, I was like terrified. A little kid who didn't know any better, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah. I think 87 might have been my first show, I think.
Obviously,
first time going to a show.
You made it. That's a good sign.
Yeah, and you made it out.
Yeah. You know, like perfect examples, the first show I went to was at this bar called Blondie's, and I remember being 13 or whatever I was and walking up to the bar and buying a pitcher of beer.
That's Jeez. Awesome.
I was like, little baby-faced kid. Like, yeah, here's your pitcher. Give me $10, kid. You know what I mean? Like,
they didn't give a fuck. They didn't care. Yeah.
They're like, have a good night, man.
Yeah. A year or two later, I smoked crack in that bar.
Oh, my God.
On the 5 feet away from, like, the doorman. Out of an antenna, we broke off a car in the parking lot.
Oh, my God.
You know
God.
What I mean? Like, Jesus. It was crazy. There was no rules, like, at all in Detroit. There's just no rules.
Yeah.
And then you guys, was it 91 when you guys started the Suicide Machines?
Yeah, man. Like I said, it was like, that was like, Gangster Fun kind of showed me the way.
Yeah.
That there's a more fun side of Detroit that I didn't really know much about, you know, and they showed me it didn't have to be scary. And a lot of people were going to the shows. I mean, they're just as, you know, messed up as everyone else, but they weren't accepting, you know, the violence at their shows, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, it opened a way different way, I think, for me to think. And then, like I said, there's a whole new way of a more conscious, you know, punk, hardcore,
yeah,
post-hardcore,
and
that kind of thing.
That had to be a little shocking when, you know, not all that many years later, you guys are playing in basketball arenas opening for No Doubt.
Yeah, that was, you know what, No Doubt are very, very, very nice people.
Oh, for sure.
Very,
but
very
it's
nice
a much
people.
Different vibe than I would imagine a punk show in Detroit and, you know, playing in the Delta Center here in Salt Lake City.
Well, listen, you know what? My theory is it's harder to win over a small crowd than it is a big crowd.
Yeah.
And I think about, you know, MC, an MC, like hip hop, master of ceremonies. Like I am there to move those people and get them in a good mood and get them going and get them dancing and singing. And even if they don't know us, just to get, you know, get whatever they need to get off of their mind for the night or the week that's been bothering them and get everyone in a good mood and just maybe not, you know, think about it in any way you want to being at that show, whatever you need to do to make yourself in a good mood or happy or get your pissed off out or whatever. But like, that's kind of how I felt like. So going into a big, huge stadium with a million people or less, if we opened for No Doubt, no one was there, one or the other, like I'm going to work. No, all those people get the fuck up. You know what I mean? And that was the thing. Like, I feel like it's harder to move six people in a coffee house.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
For sure. For sure.
Well, and I'm thinking about little Jess when I was 14, looking at my friends going, he just said, fuck, let's get up.
It was dangerous. You know, it was different from what we were used to.
Yeah, the No Doubt crowds were a little bit weirded on us, I'm not going to lie. But
oh, I loved it.
I'm only thinking of this right now. I don't know why, and I'm going to say a really fun No Doubt story. And it doesn't have to do with No Doubt. We were playing that, I think Utah was playing, was the last game. Utah Jazz versus, I can't even remember who it was, but it was supposed to be the last game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? With NBA. I'm not a basketball guy. I'm trying to think of it.
Oh, it was in June. That was against the Bulls. That was in the finals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was the Bulls.
Yeah.
That's right. Mailman was on the team and all that. So we're playing the stadium. So all ESPN is already there the night before. But we're playing with No Doubt. And I'm sitting in my dressing room with all my guys. And, you know, Mike, our tour manager, is a big sports guy. And we see this guy for ESPN, I think it was. And he's looking down into where all the tour buses are and everything. And there's our band. And I'm like, oh man, is this live? And I don't say a word. Say a word to anyone. I just bolt down the hall, run through the arena. I look up and he's up top on the wall filming down still, and I totally moon the kid. I came back into the dressing room and everyone was like in tears on the ground laughing.
Oh, that's amazing. That's amazing. God.
That makes me so happy.
Yeah, that's my No Doubt story.
Well, see, and I'm thinking
I got a few No Doubt stories, but they're all a little too crazy to be told. So
I say, well, if you ever change your mind on that, you can always come back on the show.
Got to protect the guilty, man. You can't snitch.
He's thinking about it. I see it.
I'll give you one lighthearted one.
Uh huh.
So the first time we went, I think this is probably why they took us out a second time on tour. We kind of won them over in a really crazy way. Oh man, I got a couple good ones. So, first two or three days of the tour with them and Weezer, we didn't talk or see anybody in No Doubt.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had an autograph signing in the hallway out in the arena, like at some time for whoever came early. And our drummer stood in line. Derek at the time was in the Alpine Trio.
Uh-huh.
Stood in line, like, hey, I'm Derek. Nice to meet you guys. I'm in the band. You brought us on tour. And they're like, no, you are. And he's like, I don't know. I just wanted to come meet you guys. And they're just like,
That's what it took to get him to meet you. That's funny.
Yeah. And then the last tour we did with them was the last day it was San Francisco. And I had Gwen's, she had her own personal stylist on the tour.
Mm-hmm.
And a full closet of clothes, would make clothes for her, do everything. Like, it was crazy. And I was like, hey, dress me up, make me look like Gwen. And she did. She dressed me up, put me in a wig, put like me in, like, you know, made a dress for me and everything. And I came on stage with like flowers.
Uh-huh.
And I walked over to Gwen. Like, I walked over all the guys in the band, like I was going to give them a flower. And they actually didn't know who I was at first. And
then, nice.
Like, that made up good makeup, everything. And then I went up to the drummer actually realizes me. And he's like laughing, trying not to like laugh, because he totally knows it's me. Scared the guitar player, Tom. He had no idea it was me. And then I walked over to Gwen and I looked at her like I'm going to hand the rose. She's like, oh my gosh, you're going to give me the rose. And I threw it on the ground. I stomped on the rose and turned around and walked away from her. And then my guys came out in just underwear and beat me up.
Oh my God. Are there any photos of this?
I've got two photos of my henchmen who beat me up. They had like stuff put over their eyes and they cut out holes.
Oh my god. They put over.
But all my dresses was torn off at that point, so there's no like they beat me.
And that was one of her dresses.
Yeah. That's probably why they never asked me up to that.
Kicked off the tour right there.
Oh my god, I love it.
So you guys started the Suicide Machines, and obviously Destruction by Definition, fucking classic record. I mean, it's a staple for anyone who came up in that time. And then you followed up with Battle Hymns, and then you guys kind of switched gears a little bit for the next couple records. When you guys decided that you were going to switch, you know, gears, was that a conscious decision, or was it just like a product of kind of what you were doing at that time?
All right, so I'll give you the whole history. Green World was our first.
Okay, that's
Green
right.
World was first. That was just us being dumb kids, didn't know what we were doing. Had a 7-inch out too. Then we did the split with the Rudiments, mm-hmm. which was a lot of the songs that got recorded for Destruction. Mm-hmm. Still dumb kids, didn't know what we were doing. Kind of started understanding how to like even sing at all. I didn't know how to sing. And then did Destruction. Did Battle Hymns, and we only had, I think, we had booked the studio, but we were on tour like 11 months out of the year. Mm-hmm. We had booked it. We're like, we're going to do another record. And then we just kept getting asked to do all these tours that we couldn't say no to. And then we got home about 3 or 4 weeks before Battle Hymns, and they're like, all right, we have 6 songs. That's it. So we had 3 weeks to write that whole record.
Oh my God.
Basically.
And aren't there 20 songs on that record too?
Yeah. We did. And that's why half of them suck. And then, and then the record did horrible, or, you know, by standards of whatever a major label is. And at the time, Dan was really into smoking weed and listening to the Beatles and Frank Zappa.
Oh.
And he wanted to make a pop record. And Royce, a lot of people don't know Royce, the bass player that was in the band at the time. He really loves pop music, and he's great. He's a good pop writer. He wrote Sometimes I Don't Mind. A lot of people probably tell you I hate that song. I actually love that song. I think that song's great.
It's a great song.
But yeah. I love that song. And but you know, he was in the same boat as Dan, and they're writing all these pop songs, and I'm still writing like punk songs, pissed off stuff. And I'm just like, dude, you know what? I'll do your pop stuff. Just let me write the lyrics, because they're terrible.
Yeah.
You know, and they're like, no, these are my songs. And I was like, all right, dude, I'm gonna be the first to say I told you so, but I'll give it 100% regardless,
right?
So when, and the funny part is like that whole album was just before Pro Tools.
Mm-hmm.
No Pro Tools on that record. That is everyone actually playing. There's all the symphonic stuff is really violins, drums, cellos, all the singing is, none of it has been
auto-tuned?
Yeah, none of us auto-tuned. That wasn't even a thing yet.
Golf clap.
Well, this is what ruined the next record. So that comes out. It flopped. Well, it didn't really flop. It actually did pretty well. People hated us. We lost most of our bass because people were pissed off. We weren't playing punk anymore. And I think with the Machines, we always kind of do what we want to do.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's hard. No one ever expected a hardcore album from us.
Yeah.
You know, we've done two basically, but like, you know, we also came up in early Detroit where, you know, we grew up as Negative Approach. We're the God in Detroit, you know,
right.
People understand why we play hardcore and why I scream. It's because, you know, I wasn't looking to like things like New York City or the West Coast or anywhere. It was like Negative Approach was from Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
That is hardcore. And that is who you like. Mm-hmm. Like I came up with local bands more than I did anything else.
Yeah.
And that was it. They were the highest standard. And so that's why we scream a lot too. That being said, things were getting horrible in the band.
Mm-hmm.
No one was getting along. Like all everyone, I mean, that's, you know, tales old time, all that. But, we got to steal this record and the songs were just like, there's a couple good songs, but I think everyone hated each other so much. You can hear it on that record.
Mm-hmm.
No one was talking. Other, and that was the first record that did have Pro Tools. And if you ask me, Steal This Record sounds super stagnant. It sounds like it's Pro Tools.
Interesting. I hadn't thought about that. Huh. Interesting.
I'm going to have to re-listen to it now.
Yeah, there's like 2 or 3 songs that are good. But even if the other ones that I like were any, even in the sound of it, the sound of the album ruins it for me. Like even the ones I like, I can't hear it. It just sounds stagnant.
Hmm.
And it reminded me of a time where everybody hated each other.
Oh man.
You know, you're touring with each other in a van for, you know, years from like, I think the first tour we ever did was 94 all the way to whenever that record came out. We're just living on top of each other 8, 9, 10, 11 months out of the year. No one's really talking anymore. We're just hating each other. So I hate that record. Worst one ever. Bottom of the list. So that's how the transition happened. There's Beatles, weed, being kids, hatred. And then there was kind of like a rebirth with A Match and Some Gasoline.
Yeah.
Which we had got Rich in the band. You know, Ryan had already been in the band for a while playing drums. He came in just after Battle Hymns. He was from a great ska punk band from here called Bourgeois Filth. And he fit right in. His bass player, Rich, was amazing. And once Royce was gone, we got him and it was just like, it clicked. Like, we put on A Match and Some Gasoline. And to me, that's like, that's my favorite record.
Yeah, that one, when that came out, I remember it just, it blew my face off because it was, I mean, it was a very political record. And a lot of your music has been over the years. But that one is really when I was starting to really form my politics. And it came out and it just hit every fucking thing that I was feeling at that time, with just the rage of the George Bush White House and everything going on. It really hit me. And then when War Profiteering came out, that's my, I mean, up until the new one, that's my favorite record, War Profiteering. That one is, it is everything I love about music all in one record, start to finish.
I'm not trying to sink your ship, but it's like 4 or 5 on my list.
Oh, is it really? Interesting. Why is that?
You know what, man? It was too easy. It was too easy. I can't explain it. It was so easy to point a finger at someone like George Bush and, you know, and the military industrial complex and all the things wrong in the world. It's so easy to just go like that.
Mm-hmm.
It was just easy lyrically, man. Like, it almost felt like I was cheating. It was so easy. I knew the band was kind of coming to an end too.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote 12 Years on Tour or whatever that song is. I can't remember the name of the title anymore, but like I knew it was coming to an end because
mm-hmm.
I knew at this point, again, I was going to lose 2 more members because they did not like our guitar player, which is what I've been going through ever since 1991. And I knew it. So part of me doesn't like that record because of that, but really a big part of it is only because I felt like it was too easy, man. Take this for example, and maybe this will at least put it in perspective. I could sit here and go, yeah, our government sucks. And this is the problem. And there's these idiots going out there protesting, not being able to come out. And Trump, Trump, Trump. I mean, it's too easy. It's too easy. And I felt like that was what I did with Warcraft here. It's just too easy, man. Like, there's got to be a more intricate way to make people think about themselves and look at the world and maybe take it in perspective to them.
Do you think that you've accomplished that on the new record? Because to me, it feels like you're doing that a lot more.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the cohesiveness comes from the fact that I wrote all the lyrics too. Mm-hmm. You got to think the song. I didn't write one song. Sorry, I wrote almost all the lyrics, but like, everyone was writing. There's 3 dominant writers usually through all the periods.
Mm-hmm.
It would be me, Dan, or Eric, or me, Royce, or Dan. And that was it. So you'd always have these other perspectives in the writing, and it never felt cohesive to me. You know what I mean? And they wouldn't allow me to write my own lyrics, even if they came up with a melody or something, or a cadence, or they wouldn't allow me to change their lyrics because they were very headstrong about it. And that's fine. I get it. I'm a little bit headstrong about people trying to change my songs, but I felt like there was a more cohesive situation.
Mm-hmm.
That's all with the new record. Like, probably just because I wrote almost all of it lyrically, you know.
I have a completely random question, because in the bands, because when I worked with a lot of bands back in the day, you always find that people have their like role within the band. So were you like the mediator? Were you the instigator? Were you the peaceful one? Were you the angry one? Because it's like a family. You become a family.
The job, Yeah, the job changes.
That's true.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It was the peacekeeper for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Unfortunately, I tried my best, but you know, the situation between those people and their and who they were and just they, their personalities and who they were as human beings did not gel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it, there's nothing you can do about that. Some people change too eventually. And I unfortunately found myself usually being trying to keep the peace and keep people around. But, you know, obviously I must have not done it very good because
it's exhausting. It gets to a point where you think you're doing it. And then you're like, dude, I can't do it. I just can't figure your shit out.
That was war profiteering.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, I was just like that, as soon as that record came out, we were back to finding another drummer and bass player. And I was just like, God, I don't even know what to do. You know, like, and then we had Danny from Against All Authority sit in with us mm-hmm. at the time on bass. And even he was just like, oh my God, how are you in a band with this guy? You know? And I was just like, yeah, I give up, man. I got a job offer back home.
Yeah.
It. And then, you know, we had one last tour booked in Mexico, and dude, me and we just had it out. Like, but I, you know how it is, you know how you just said like, oh, there's just nothing I can do anymore.
Uh-huh.
Like, it got to the point where about, I was probably going to go to jail out in the alleyway because I was going to I was feeling very physical.
Yeah.
And I could see it in the other person's eyes that was always causing the problems that it just didn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
And that it was done. And I was happy that I could see that because I didn't end up doing something I would regret.
Yeah. You
know? Moment of clarity there for sure. I mean, at least it didn't sour you too much, 'cause you went out and started four more other bands.
That's true.
Hey, look, you know, I think my first band, I was 13, you know what I mean? So I've been doing this a long time. It's not like you don't quit, right? You don't quit what you know what you do and what you enjoy or what you're good at or what you helps you, what your art is, whatever it is in life. It's like, it's there for you to make you who you are and help you deal with who you are or you or the rest of the world. You know what I mean? And that's what I do.
Well, and thank God for it, because all of them are amazing. I was going through all of your different bands. I'm like, he's so talented. I hope you never stop.
Well, I'm talented at finding the right people and bringing them together.
Still the peacemaker.
I am not that talented. I can write a song, but like I know, like when I meet people and I know who I want to work with, it's weird. It's like I know it. Like when I did the Traitors, I handpicked everybody. You know what I mean? Like, there's just like that going on. Break Anchor was like almost like a diamond in the rough. I knew who I wanted to start it with.
Mm-hmm.
And then I ran this Kyle, the other singer. And I was just like, you are the best singer I've ever heard in my life. Like, and I love his voice. You know what I mean? Like, so it's weird. I'm really good at knowing how to put people together who will vibe.
Yeah.
Regardless of ideas or beliefs.
Yeah.
You know, I've got a weird nose for it. You know,
it's your superpower.
I just wish I could pick sane people.
That's a tough one.
In the arts and in life in general, that's tricky. You got to see what kind of insanity you can handle.
Yeah. Well, how about the other bands? Are you guys all still active with the other? I mean, obviously right now we're kind of in a holding pattern all over the country, but as far as producing new music and planning things in the future, you guys all still active?
You know, there's a little bit of rumblings of Hellmouth once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think I'm not angry, you know?
Yeah.
That's a good problem to have.
I don't even know if I could go do some of the old songs, because half of those records is me really wrestling with hating who I was. And I kind of passed that. So I don't know. And it's nothing to do. Dude, I actually really love all the guys in Hellmouth. They're my family.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I just don't know. I would like to think that it would be fun.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't know if I could revisit that person.
Yeah.
But who knows? I never say never about anything really anymore.
Yeah.
Break Anchor. You know what? I mean, you know, we have a lot of, you know, drug issues, you know, we have some abuse issues, and I'm not going to say that I am not just as guilty.
Mm-hmm.
And I, once again, I love all those guys. Dude, mm-hmm. I love, like, I put out one of the best records I've ever put out with any band was the Break Anchor album. I love that record. You know what I mean? That we did. And I think if everyone can just calm down and be cool again to each other and maybe slow down a little or stay alive.
Yeah.
Stay alive.
Yeah.
I would love it. I mean, the last time we did a show about a year ago and it was a blast. I had a great time. I have a really fun time playing with those guys. They usually can't remember it by the end of the night, but it's a really fun band to play in. Traders Law, I think, is kind of going to be my retirement band.
Oh, hell yeah.
I can see that.
You know what I mean? It's just kind of always going to be there no matter what, I think.
Mm-hmm.
First outlet for me. I don't have to, it's mellow. It's punk, but it's mellow enough for me to not like, those guys keep me in check.
Yeah. They're good for you.
Yeah. They keep me in check. You know what I mean? So.
Well, how does that work when you're about to adventure into another endeavor? Do you say, you know, I'm feeling the urge to go do some hardcore. I'm going to let's make a Hellmouth record, or let's start a hardcore band, or, you know, I'm a little bit more mellow. Let's start, you know, kind of a reggae type thing right now. How do you do that?
It just depends on my mood. I've got a whole hardcore album written. Not people don't know about it. It just sounds like old school, like Agnostic Front kind of stuff. Will I ever do anything with it? I don't know. Maybe. The D-beat thing was cool because I don't sing it. I just play guitar. I can pump out really angry sounding riffs all day on the guitar. You know what I mean? It's easy. Like I was raised on stuff like Discharge.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So that's kind of my thing. So when you hear some of the more Discharge-y things in the things I've done, like Hellmouth or Parts of the Machines, that's probably me. Cause I like D beat, fast, crust punk, you know? And I don't know. It just depends on my mood, man. Like, you know, I've done like a rock and roll band that was kind of all stonery. That was like 15 years ago.
Uh-huh.
No one knows about Left and Ruin. That was fun. Like, it's always different. Like, I played guitar in an emo band. A lot of people don't know about that. You know,
I'm just kind of the mood.
Yeah. Oh God. If you go to my Instagram page and look at the things I've done and released, you're like, what band is that?
I know what I'm doing later now.
I know.
With my newfound time.
Yeah. Go to the bottom and you're going to laugh. You're going to be like, what in the hell is this? Like, I've done tons of stuff that no one knows about. Some of it was like sort of popular in the Midwest, you know, like people knew who we were, but we never really ventured outside the Midwest.
I think you need to have those. I think you need to indulge those instincts though, especially when you're a creative person. I think mm-hmm. that's important to at least explore this stuff because sometimes it clicks, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, man. A guy just recently asked me to write some lyrics to some hip hop with him.
Hell yeah.
And yeah. And he is really good friends with, give me a minute. What are the guys from Run DMC's names? Well, one of those guys is on a track and he's like, you want to be on this track with you, like me, you and DMC. I think that's who it is. Daryl Mack. And I was just kind of like, are you kidding me? He's like, no, he's a good friend of mine. Like, I'm like, I don't know how to rhyme. He's like, I'll give you some pointers, man. But I got the hook. And this is what the song is about. And I was just kind of like, yeah, dude, I'll do it.
Why not? Sure. Life is short.
I did a song with Ice-T before. Why not? You know,
dude, I'm learning so much.
You've done a song with Ice-T?
Yeah.
What was that like? He is such a huge character that I have these ideas in my head of what he'd be like. And I almost don't want to meet him because I think I'd be crushed.
He's a weirdo, man.
That's kind of exactly what I was hoping you'd say.
Wait, are there any good stories?
Nah, I could. They're lame, to be honest with you. Evil Lee was really cool, though. His DJ, I like him a lot. He's really cool. I toured with them in Europe on the Warped Tour.
Oh yeah.
But like, so the first time, we had this really bad song. It was like a joke song, poking fun at rap metal, called "I Hate Everything," and I was like, man, I want to get. You know, Isham from Detroit on this. It's funny. It's like, or maybe one of the guys from ICP will be funny. Like, it's funny to me. It's like poking fun at rap metal. It's right. Like, how can you be goofy and do all this goofy kind of thing, but then be so angry, you know? And so we did Hate Everything as a joke. And so somehow our producer at the time was like, oh, I know Ice-T. I was like, shut up. He's like, yeah, yeah. He's like, dude, we'll just throw him a bag of money. He'll go on there. And I was like, all right, yeah. Why not, you know? Before I even met him. Dude, we had to take a bag of $7,000 in a brown paper bag.
No.
Like a sandwich. Walk up, get buzzed into his gates, knock on his side door, and leave $7,000 inside his house.
Oh, my God.
And the best part, then we get the track back, and I'm like, he is serious. Like, we're joking around on the track, and he's like, I'm going to kill your whole family. Blah, I'm taking off. Like, oh, man. I didn't understand. I don't think I got the joke. Right?
Oh, my God.
Right.
He
took
it seriously.
Right. And all of us are like, this is terrible. So we didn't even, like, release it. Like, this sucks. And then we go on tour with him in Europe, and he's like, who are you? And I'm like, and the best part is Evil E was there. It's like, oh man, I know it. He started singing it, and he was like, no, I mean, and he started rapping it. I was like, yeah, and I ended up hanging out with Evil E. Evil E is really, he was, you know what? I mean, Ice-T was really cool. He's very nice, very, very, just very like, yeah, cool. Like he's chill. He was chill. He's just a little strange in a cool way.
A little strange. Bag of money at the door. Strange.
Well, his band Body Count, their cover of Institutionalized is fucking great. It's so
brilliant.
Hilarious. The video is the best when he's sitting there sipping his Kool-Aid, and it's like, yeah. Ice-T, bit, you know, cop killer, sitting there drinking a juice box. It's just there's something hilarious about that guy.
Dude, we played 3 shows on the Warped Tour in the States with Body Count, and they were freaking hilarious. They're great. And I remember in San Francisco, Jello Biafra came out and did this crazy spiel and interview. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, there's another weirdo.
I was going to say, are there Jello stories?
I'm like, you know, and I'm like, oh, dude, you know what? I probably wouldn't even sing political songs. It wasn't for you. He's like, yeah, that's cool. Like, don't support this. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I know about that whole beef. He's like, no, don't ever support the real. But I'm the real. I was like, talk this guy. Walked away, like, forget it. I met him again later when we did the played the anti-RNC show in Cleveland. It was like us, Ministry, it was the anti-Republican National Convention, and like Jowl came out, and he's actually really cool, man. Like, I ended up hanging out with him a little bit and stuff, and came out and introduced our band and stuff like that, kind of like what he did for Body Count. But he's actually really cool. But my first impression was like,
slowly backing away, giving him finger guns.
I'm not going to ruin a hero. You know what I mean? I'm not ruining a hero.
It just seems like he would be super fun, but exhausting at the same time. He's just so full. He's just like, he's going constantly.
You know what I mean? He was a different animal at the protest show. He was really cool. Very laid back, very nice, easily approachable. He wasn't exhausting at all. He was actually really cool. I was very happy to meet him a second time, and, you know, maybe just a different frame of mind. You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Jello's just, he's such a larger than life character that it just, he's, man, I just to be a documentary crew and follow him around for a day just to see what Jello does all day. Like, I think that'd be so fun.
Great. You know, half the reason I even have any sort of conscious thinking towards right and wrong when it comes to, you know, politics or, you know, situations of humans towards humans in this world is probably because of the Dead Kennedys, you know. Oh. That was the first band that actually conscious of something, you know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm. 100%.
Like,
yeah.
I didn't know who Reagan was. I didn't understand what Reagan was doing and Reaganomics were in the end of like the 80s and, you know, and Jello and like, you know, Dirty Rotten Imbeciles kind of like opened my mind to like, oh, okay, so this is why Detroit is completely impoverished and horrible, you know?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Jason, man, it has been so much fun talking to you. I thank you for coming on.
I know, this has been a blast.
I've been referring to the new record, and I haven't even named it. I feel, can you tell I'm not a professional? It's called Revolution Spring. It's out on Fat. How did Fat get involved in this?
About 2.5-3 years ago, I just emailed Mike and Aaron Burkett, and I was just like, hey, we're going to do another record. And they're like, yeah, we'll put it out. Like,
ba-da-bing.
I think they're probably regretting it, because about 1.5 years later, I was like, yeah, we're working on some demos. They're like, yeah, you're ever going to get this thing done? Like, what are you doing? Like, I'm willing it. You know what I mean? And then almost 2.5 years into it, we finally turned into demos. And Mike even wanted to try to pick all the songs. Oh, there's you got good songs. Like, I want to pick some songs. And we're just like, nah, we'll pick them. No, but I think they were pretty stoked that we weren't going to hand in a pile of shit, you know?
Yeah. Well, the whole new album is, you can just listen to the entire thing all the way through.
Yep. Yeah. It's not a collection, and you don't see this a whole lot. We've talked about this in a couple of our recent shows, but you don't see it a lot. Usually you hear like a record nowadays and it's a collection of, it's just like tracks, random tracks. It feels like this feels like a full on record, and it feels like a Suicide Machines record.
That's good. I'm glad. You know, what would you say earlier? Oh, like an old friend or something?
Yeah, it feels like an old friend. As soon as I heard, I think Always Awkward was that, I think it was the first single to come out. As soon as I heard that, I was like, oh, shit, I forgot how much I needed Suicide Machines in my life. And it was just, it reminded me of all the reasons I love punk rock and all the reasons I love ska and just why I got into this scene. So thanks for making it. I know it's been 15 years. Thanks for coming back and revisiting this band, because it means a lot to a lot of us.
Yeah. Super happy makes you in a good mood, you know?
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, in our house, he was playing it, and I'm like the weird, comical, too happy one. I just popped my head, and I was like, is that Suicide Machines? Can you turn it up?
She was very happy to hear that, yeah.
I know. I've been nothing but happy.
So, Jason.
Yeah, all the people that doubted we had any angry songs left, the angry songs will probably be on the split we're doing with Coquettish. So.
Awesome. Hell yes.
There's a few angry ones we left off of the record that were really good. We're probably going to put those on the split. So
I almost feel like you should do like at some point in your lifetime, all of these like secret songs that are just hiding in different places might need to just see the light of day at some point, along with the stories. Yeah. You never know.
Maybe they shouldn't see the light of day for a good reason. It might suck. I do. Well, this is kind of funny. I do have an arrangement with Vinny from Less Than Jake, and maybe he won't say that he does, or maybe he's too stoned to remember. When I die, if I die before him, my ashes will be mailed to him, and he's going to have me pressed up in a greatest hits.
Oh, my God.
But the thing about that is you can't play those records when you have ashes in them.
Damn it.
They're just like, they're almost like an art piece.
Well, still cool. That's badass.
And a little bit of a tease is also at the same time.
Yeah.
You're saying, did you want me to die? That's cool.
I just meant having that record there with all those songs and you can't play it.
Yeah. Well, have you ever seen Record Ashes in it?
No, I haven't.
Are they cool?
I had no idea that was even a thing.
I'm going to have to look into that.
Can you give me 1 second just to step away?
Yeah, of course.
Absolutely.
All right. So listen. And don't get upset if you're a religious person.
We're not.
We're not.
You're safe.
We're idiots, and we spent about, I don't know, hellmouth. This record, we spent probably about $250 on like a 200-year-old Bible. You know, it was beautiful. It's like a work of art. Like just beautiful. Like, I don't know if you'd call it lithography. Like
yeah.
Full pictures. Like, I don't know. Like all German.
Beautiful, almost embossed.
Right, like an art piece, it's like 200 years old. And we burned it live on YouTube to document it. And anyway, we sent the ashes to the pressing plant. I don't know if you can see that.
Oh my God. Holy
shit.
But so if you see the center of the plastic, see how there's ashes in there?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
So they just fall out of the vinyl. They're stuck in the vinyl and they come out of the vinyl.
Wow.
So we mailed the ashes to the pressing plant, or Vinny did from Less Than Jake for us, because he pressed it, and they put it in the records. And all these people were going crazy over buying it, and they're laughing because we're like, it doesn't play. this record was all just to make record collectors mad.
Yes,
that is the fucking best thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, it's unplayable conceptually. You know what I mean? That was the whole point of it. Like people like they, and they did, they totally went for it. They're paying like $100 a copy to try to get it. And they're like, you pull it out and the ashes fall on you because they're packed. Pouring them on and packing them. People were so pissed off that you couldn't play the record and they paid all this money. We're just like, yeah, because you're idiots for paying that much for a record.
Oh my God.
Is this a thing that has happened before, or did you guys kind of do it on your own?
I don't know. As far as I know, we came up with that on our own, but I mean, who knows? Someone may have done it before.
That is wild.
I'm going to press my ashes into vinyl. So.
Oh my, that cracks me up because I had friends who collected vinyls just for the different colors. And then they would make this huge big deal about playing it and putting it on Instagram. So that's amazing.
And then yeah, Vinny's going to have it on his wall.
People are complaining all over the place. Like, I can't play the record. And we're like, yep, you're an idiot.
Well, Jason, man, this has been a lot of fun. If you know, God willing, you don't die anytime soon.
Please don't. Please don't.
I got to see that picture of your ashes in a vinyl on Vinny's wall somewhere. That'd be amazing. Yeah. But thanks for joining us, man. Seriously, this has been a lot of fun. Learned a lot. And like I said, keep doing what you're doing. And you're very talented. We'll be following your career very closely, you know, whenever we get through this shitstorm that we're in right now.
And hey, if you ever want to come on again, and if you find the picture of you dressed up as a girl, I really want to see it.
Yeah, like I said, they tore everything off of me at that point, so I just have like makeup and no shirt, like because they beat me up, like they beat me up, like pile drive me. So.
Oh my god!
I don't look cool; they look cool.
Oh my god!
They're like henchmen or something. You know? So
that's awesome. Well, hey man, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
No, thanks for taking interest. I appreciate it.
There will always be a calm between all the storms. So
And that was Simple off Revolution Spring from the Suicide Machines. That is, that song, I said it in the interview, it really did kind of change my perspective.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when you get, you're just frustrated, man. I'm listening to these jackasses all over the country bitching because they can't go get their hair done.
Yeah.
And like, I was so tense. I'm like, they're going to kill so many people.
Yeah.
And like, my body was tensing up. And then I listened to it, that song, and I was actually listening to the lyrics, and it physically calmed me down. Like, I could noticeably tell or feel my body like untense, and I was just able to let go of some of it.
Yeah.
So it was much needed. And so I thought we would play that.
See, and it just made me bop around and just made me extremely happy. It's just, yeah. Suicide Machines just holds like such a happy little spot in my heart. And so I am just like on cloud nine. That was awesome. That was so awesome.
I remember when I found the Suicide Machines, I was probably a sophomore or junior in high school, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved punk rock. I'd loved punk rock for years, but I was just kind of starting to dip my toe into the ska stuff. And I wasn't quite there. I wasn't really into the horns as much. And then I heard the Suicide Machines. I think they were on Loveline, actually, with Adam Carolla. Yeah. I would listen to that. And I was like, fuck, this is really good. It was just the right amount of ska mixed with the hardcore punk that I loved.
Yeah.
And so it really, they were kind of my ska gateway band.
Ah, that makes sense. See, and I, as we talked about, I was converted at the young age of 14-ish. And then I had a lot of friends who were skateboarders, and they were always playing Tony Hawk. And that song, New Girl, is on there. And so I loved it because there were so many good songs on that specific game that I didn't even care that they were playing games the entire time. I was like, turn it up, man. Turn it up.
Oh, that soundtrack. All of those Tony Hawk games had the best soundtrack.
Oh, yeah.
They're the best. But again, thanks to Jason Navarro for coming on. Terry, again, big thank you to you from the Jukebox Romantics for hooking us up with this interview.
We have been having the most fun talking to everybody. You guys, this is just like, I think Jason was saying, you got to see the good in things.
Mm-hmm.
And we've gotten a chance to get back to recording and getting to talk to people and talk about music and talk about their lives. And it's just been amazing.
It's been
amazing.
It's been great. Yeah, for sure. I mean, we got to keep it up because it's just...
This is too much fun.
It's reconnecting me with, you know, I was getting old there for a minute. It's like, I'm not feeling it like I used to. And now getting, you know, being forced to be stuck in a quarantine.
Yeah.
But still getting the chance to talk to everybody. It's making me feel like I'm 20 years old again.
Oh, wait. Well, and I just I love talking to everybody, hearing your stories and meeting you. And you guys are all on my list of incredible people. Like, this has just been awesome. So awesome.
So we're going to do everything we can to keep it going.
Absolutely.
Hope everyone's doing well. Staying safe as always. We will be back next time. I don't know what we got planned, but we're going to find some people.
We're going to find some people. If you want to be on the show, reach out to us. We'd love to talk to you.
TalkMusicToMeSLC@gmail.com is the email address. Or just head over to TalkMusicToMeSLC.com. That's the easiest way to get in touch with us and to find all of our stuff. Until next time, I'm Alan.
And I'm Jess.
And we'll see you later.
That concludes our service. All right, I have two announcements. Friday, you will have the chance to party down in the church basement to the Jesus Rock Stylings of Testament. That's Friday, 6 p.m. sharp.
All the best bands are affiliated with Satan.
This has been a Studio B production.